Well, once again, we were attacked. And the first part of the show, although it went out via radio, did not go out via video. And we were getting hit pretty hard in our own computer here, which was interesting. And we were not able to get the first 5 minutes or so of the show. However, we got the rest of it. And I think you'll love it. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. During the break, I tried everything that I could to get the video feed going right, but it isn't, and it's pretty curious. My guest this evening is Jeff Woolwine. We were supposed to have Jeff on the show on Monday night. And Monday night. And we got ready to do the show 3 minutes before the show. His telephone line gets cut. All right, so you got to see his video. And then something happened. He got his phone fixed. And his line actually literally got cut. And so he got his phone fixed. And then we scheduled to have him on tonight, and someone has, it could all be coincidence, but the video feed is down. I do think that folks are able to, even if they're trying to use video, they're able to hear me. That much is broadcasting, but the video part is down. And that's no fun. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kevin. Always an honor to be here. Thanks a lot.
It's pretty curious, the stuff that's going on, isn't it?
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it?
It's a little bit more than interesting. I don't know. Jeff, I think it's an indication that you're really probably right on target with something here that someone doesn't want to get out. They don't want it out there.
Well, it could seem that way. Very interesting on the way things are progressing.
Yeah. Well, I've just verified that we are on the air with audio. Of course, our radio stream is reliable. That's almost never a problem. But it's the video stream that is down. They're getting the audio, but they're not getting the video. And if I could fix it, I would, folks, but I can't. It's out of my hands and in the hands of who knows who. Oh, mercy. Jeff, your video that you just came out with, I played that when we couldn't get you on the air. We had you on the air through your video, and I have continued to get really positive comments in the email about that video, and I have to say I think you did a great job with it.
Well, thank you, Kevin. I really had fun making it, you know, And I apologize, it's taken me so many years to do this. You know, I think everyone's been kind of waiting for me to do something like this. But I wanted to make sure I got my facts straight, and I wanted to make sure I did all the hiking and got everything set just right, you know. So that's why I waited for a long time. And actually, this is something that's going to grow into a book. So I'm right in the middle of writing a book, and it's going to go into Charles Holbrook and what, you know, he was doing here on South Mountain, you know, as far as protecting things here and making sure, you know, things didn't get disturbed. And it'll go from there, you know. It'll go way back into time, into 1200, you know, B.C. and things like this. So it's going to be an interesting book. So I'm excited. So this is something that I wanted to get out there. I found a few things out there that has been really overlooked for the past 80 years, and through my investigations on these UFO huntings, I've dug up all this stuff. And so it was, I wanted to write a book about it, but this is, I don't know how long this is going to take me, so I figured I should get something out like this and just kind of promote on what's to come.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I think when people saw your video, they finally sort of grasped the size, the enormity of what we're talking about out there. That, you know, it's really, really a lot of petroglyphs and a lot of lore that goes with those petroglyphs. And then we know today about the ley lines that run through that area. Mm-hmm. And Walter Bosley, when he came out and we went up to South Mountain, he had a map with him that showed the ley lines. He's got maps for the whole United States and then specific maps for certain states. And according to his maps, the largest conjunction or intersection of ley lines in North America is right out there at South Mountain, and it's at the place called Mystery Castle. It's right underneath Mystery Castle. So, you know, you've got tons of ley lines all over the place out there, and it's just phenomenal.
Yeah, I kind of go over that, and I think, you know, in the study, you know, while we're out there on the third day, when we're putting together this film, we actually had one of those things come in and see us there. And it's right at the spot. Now, everything on this video pretty much goes in sync. It's 3 days of hiking, and each day goes with what we went, where we talked to, and where we went, and things like that. So, like on the third day, you know, I'm talking about these ley lines there, these squiggly lines there on the rock. Now, when I see these things, man, that's when I go out there and to investigate, I'm always finding that special symbol. And I really think that that has something to do with the energy, with the ley lines, and I think that's what the Native Americans are trying to tell us here, is that's the energy spot. And lo and behold, as soon as we got over across the field there, we had one come and see us right in that spot, right where that petroglyph stands. So it's there. There's something there. And you know what? For it to happen that easy, I think we're going to see a lot of things this year. I think things are really starting to progress out there. And I'll be going out on the mountain here in the next few weeks to try to do some more sky watching, because it's getting intense out there, in my opinion.
All right. Now, in just a moment, I'm going to show the video clip of when you're out there on the mountain and you see this thing, this UFO in the sky, and the jet turns and goes a different direction. It should have been headed towards Sky Harbor Airport, which would have taken it right through the area where this UFO was, but it turns and goes another direction. We'll see that in just a minute. But describe for us, this thing came up in the sky behind you. How did you know it was back there?
Well, you know, it was my son that noticed it. And doing this film, it was just my son and me hiking up there. And, well, that was that last day, that third day. The rest of the times, we had my girlfriend up there, and she was hiking along with us. She's not in the film there, but she's sitting behind the scenes. But anyway, that third day when we saw that UFO, it was actually my son. And I was off, you know, going to the next petroglyph. We had just filmed that one scene that I wanted to get done. We just filmed that shot. And we packed things up, we're headed to the petroglyph, and as soon as we got to that rock that I talk about with the legs and things, well, as soon as we got up there and I started filming, Josh goes, "Hey, Dad, what's that?" And I look over there, and now this is interesting, because now he was telling me, I've been going over throughout the years, Josh, my son, he's been kind of my film, my camera guy, you know, so I've been kind of teaching him how to film things, you know, and how to do movie shots and things, and how to capture the moment and this and that, so I've been kind of teaching him, but I never really kind of taught him on how to film a UFO, you know, on try to get the distance, and always try to get, you know, trees and in the, you know, it's some kind of, you know, get an airplane in it, or get the mountains, get a good shot, and give the audience, you know, some depth, you know, and show this UFO. So I never really, you know, went over that with him yet. You know, he never had a chance to film one. But, and he's bugging me. Okay, he's bugging me. Hey, Dad, if we see one out here, are you going to let me film it? Well, you know what? I have been waiting for something like that to happen for almost 5 years now. It's been a long time, about 4.5 years for us to capture something right there as it's happening. Why we got the cameras on the mountain, bada boom, bada bang. I've been waiting for that for a very long time. And when he's asking me, hey, Dad, can I film it? I'm thinking, well, yeah, you know, sure, but I'm not really thinking that we're going to see one. Okay, so when he sees it, he goes, hey, Dad, can I film it? I go, okay, all right, here's what we're going to do. I said, real quick, set up the camera. I said, I'm going to talk about it real quick. I said, I'm going to turn my head, and when I do, zoom in on the object. And I go, okay. So I said, hey, I said, things, you never know what you might see on South Mountain. And I turn around, and Josh zooms in, and see, the focus was all out of focus. And I go, hey, are you getting it? Are you getting it? And Josh is like, well, it's out of focus. It's in out of focus. And I'm like, damn. I was like, Josh, you better let me take care of this because this is too important. So I kind of took over the camera film, and we filmed it, and there was a jet. You know, I didn't see that jet until it kind of flew in the picture there, and as it did, I kind of panned back, you know, and got the good picture in there. And then it just seemed to disappear. I don't know what happened, but I panned out, and I lost it. And I panned the sky. I couldn't find it anymore, so I figured it was gone. And so I wanted to talk about it on film. You know, I wanted to put it in my documentary that I'm making. And so I talk about it, and when I turn around, and when Josh zooms in, that thing was right over here still on the field with us. It was still on the mountain. But I didn't know that until I took the film home and was putting it all together and analyzing the film and putting it together. And when the camera zoomed in, I noticed that black object still there. So that thing was sitting there in the sky there as we were filming the rest of my documentary, you know, and I had no idea that it was there.
Well, now, it looks like...
It's kind of weird.
Yeah, it looks like it's a pretty good distance away from you.
Mm-hmm.
So could you tell approximately how big it was as compared to the jet?
Oh, boy, that's hard to tell. That's so hard to tell. You know, that jet would have been easy 2,000 feet up. So, mm-hmm. And that thing was a lot closer. So I don't think that thing was even as high as that jet. If you notice, it left the mountain there. It's coming from behind that hill. When Josh zooms in, you know, it's right there. It's like, you know, in the camera, in the screen, it looks like inches from the hilltop there, but I'm sure it's about 5 feet off the mountaintop there, and it actually came from in that direction, you know, and it went up. So give or take, I have no idea, maybe 500, maybe 1,000 feet up. But when Josh zoomed in, as I turned around and then I noticed that it seemed to be a lot closer. it was a lot closer that time than uh-huh. it was when I was filming it, and that's what kind of freaked me out a little bit, because it makes me wonder, well, where was it headed? You know, did it come land behind us? Was it in the sky the whole time? You know, because it just seemed a little closer after I talked about it.
Let me just break in and say what we have done is a workaround on the video, and people should be getting video now, and they should have just now seen the film clip that you and I have been talking about. However, this workaround probably is not going to have the audio in sync with the video. It's the best we can do right now. It's a spare tire, but there we are. It's there. Okay. You know, I know the answer to most of these questions that I'm going to ask you, because I know you and we've spent some time together, and we've talked about these things, and we've been out to South Mountain together. But I'm asking them because I want everyone in the audience to know the same things. Jeff, you've been studying these petroglyphs for a long time, and most of the sky watchers, I don't know about around the country, but most of the sky watchers in this area are looking for vehicles. They're looking for flying saucers. They're looking for triangles, whatever, but vehicles. And there's nothing wrong with that because, quite obviously, from pictures that we've seen from around the world, there are vehicles that we don't know what they are. Don't know if they're from Earth or if they're from somewhere else, but they appear to employ technology way beyond what, at least what we think, is available at the present time. But as you have studied, and you started out that way as well, but as you've studied these petroglyphs, you have come to the view that, in fact, many of these things that we see in the sky are living entities that take on various shapes and forms. In your video, you show us up close in good, clear video. You show us some of these petroglyphs. And right at the beginning of your movie, you show us a petroglyph that shows a row of circles, white circles.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they are arranged very much like and look very much like what we saw in the Phoenix Lights. And it seems, and that's just one example. There are just numbers of examples of things in those petroglyphs where the same shapes have been observed in the skies above Phoenix. And so you have said previously on this show that you kind of view these petroglyphs as ancient videotape.
Sure. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right, Kevin. Mm-hmm. They didn't have, video cameras back then. They had stone boulders. And they used that spot to mark on where things happened at. That's a picture of what had happened. You see the symbols up here and these strange formations of barbells and things that we see out here, crooked snakes and flying crosses and stuff. That's what these entities look like. That's a picture. That's a picture of what to look for.
So it's a picture of what they saw. They did what we would do. We'd grab a camera,
sure,
take a picture, or grab a video camera and shoot a tape. They didn't have cameras. They didn't have video cameras. They had rocks. And so they grabbed something and chiseled into the rock what they were seeing. Okay, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Jeff Woolwine. Jeff, when we went away, we were talking about these petroglyphs sort of being the videotape from centuries past. And one of the things that I want to say, and look, I know that I've said this before. However, we have new listeners each and every night. And so they need to hear this, if this is their first time to be exposed to all of this. Petroglyphs, and for people who don't know what we're talking about, let me show you a brief video clip of Jeff out at South Mountain. And you can see those carvings on the side of the rock. And the point is, they're white. They're not painted on there, and it's not chalk. They are sort of chipped into the rock. I guess you could say chiseled, but it's not really deep. It's just chipped into the rock in those shapes. And you said that this is like videotape of what they've seen, but what is depicted there is pretty bizarre stuff, Jeff.
Oh yeah, you know, the Phoenix Lights and the things that you see in my films, that's nothing to compare it on what's really, according to the petroglyphs, according to the story, there's still more unseen life forms that have yet to come out of these mountains, in my opinion, in these hills. And if what the legend and if what these petroglyphs is telling us is true, then yeah, we have a lot more in store.
You have also said before that and you said it in the video as well, that these ancient people were really two groups, the Hohokam and the Mayan. And you base that on the fact that you have found petroglyphs that match petroglyphs that the Mayans carved in South America, right?
That's right. Not only does the evidence show proof on the mountains there, but the documents that I found that has been buried in the government archives for the last 80 years, that confirms it. You know, that yes, they knew that the Mexicans were here. And look at it now. You know, we've got Mexicans living among us now. So it's like, sure, the Mayans were here.
Well, in fact, the southern part of Arizona was at one time Mexico. And a lot of people think that the United States, I hear this a lot, that we took it. Not true. It was sold to the United States by the Mexican president, Santa Anna. And he received money for it. Probably didn't pass that money on to his government. Probably didn't pass it on to people that needed it. But he got the money. It was sold to the United States. Now, just because he sold it didn't mean that the people who were of Mexican origin left. And so we have a very large population of people whose ancestors were Mexican citizens. And then ancestors back beyond that, Mayan. And so there are remnants of the Mayans yet living in southern Arizona. But here's the thing that's interesting to me. In your video, Jeff, you talk about the fact that the Mayans brought gold here and they were trading with the Hohokam.
Mm-hmm.
And that this gold got hidden away in some caves.
Mm-hmm.
Why has that never been found, or has it been found? As a matter of fact, you told us that Phoenix, its ancient name, the ancient name of this area, of this when there was a Hohokam Mayan city here,
mm-hmm.
was Cibola.
Cibola.
Mm-hmm. Cibola. Cibola.
The seven cities of gold. And according to the map that I've discovered, that I pulled up, Sky Harbor sits right in where five of the major cities were. So one of them sits where that power plant was. That the major city was where the power plant sits. And where is it? Not Tempe, but what is that? Can't think of it now. I've got it on my website there, mm-hmm. but that's the main spot. If you notice, too, on that map I got on my website, Petroglyphs in the Sky, it marks where all the Hohokam and all the ancient structures were, and right there on the east side of South Mountain sits that power plant now, and that right there was one of the spots.
Are you thinking of Ahwatukee?
That's right, yes,
yeah.
That's it, Ahwatukee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ahwatukee, for those who are not familiar with this area, Sky Harbor, that Jeff mentioned, is the name of the airport. And then Ahwatukee is a suburb of Phoenix that's on the east
southeast.
Side. Yeah, southeast
yeah.
side, but it's on the east side of South Mountain. And So Sky Harbor Airport is sitting where one of the major cities was.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I just find it interesting. You know, we got these symbols that are scattered all over the city of Phoenix. If you notice, like when you go down Central Avenue, you look and on these where the lights are, these street lights, and hanging from it is petroglyphs. Now, it tells a story all along Central, all the way up to the mountain, to South Mountain. It shows these symbols of barbells and crooked snakes and what looks to be, you know, three Phoenix lights in the sky and things like this. And when you get to the airport, holy cow, you've got massive symbols there. And when you look at Sky Harbor from an aerial view, you'll notice on some spots there'll be like Indian carvings and things. You know, it'll be like an Indian old, like, art or whatnot. But, you know, in looking at some of these buildings out here in the city of Phoenix, some of them, in my opinion, kind of look like kachinas, and they're faced towards South Mountain. I don't know. It could be a long shot. But it is interesting. You know, we've got that stadium out there they just built, the Cardinal Stadium, which looks like a UFO, but we got that thing sitting, I think it's the Hyatt Regency that's got a UFO sitting on top of a building there. So it's just the whole city of Phoenix is based around these symbols and things from the ancient holocomps, from the Mayans, and people are going by it just thinking it's regular art, not really kind of understanding on what it is and what it could possibly represent here.
Hey, let me tell you something. About a block from my studio, there is a McDonald's restaurant. And if you go into that McDonald's restaurant, it's decorated inside with those same symbols that you see in the Hohokam petroglyphs. There's a shaman, and you know, in the video you show us a figure that you say that you think this resembles a quail.
Mm-hmm.
The feather, the top feather on the quail.
Right.
And they have that figure is in the McDonald's over here.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, now let's go back to the gold. What happened to it?
Well, you know, there. I think, you know, throughout time, according to the story, there was some people that did find, and I think there's the most popular gold mine or hot spot was called Padre's Cave, and reading the story and kind of looking at the history and things on the way Holcomb and the mines did it, when they got the gold, they melted it down, okay? And when they put them in like they had gold chunks, and they wrapped them up in leather pouches, if you will, and they put them in caves, and I call these caves banks. So in my findings and my research, we should find a whole bunch of banks scattered all over South Mountain, not only South Mountain, but the Australia Mountains too. But we should find all these banks. Now, these banks should contain gold nuggets with leather, and it's all wrapped up into these caves. Now, that's just the bank. The tombs, on the other hand, this is a different story. This is where they actually melted the stuff down, and they prayed to these things, and they worship, and they did sacrifice and sun worship to these Phoenix lights, to these sun gods over here on the mountain. And they buried these things. After this catastrophe happened, you see, as the story progresses, things were fine until one day, for reasons unknown, we still haven't figured this out yet, someone says, no, we're going to stop this sacrifice. Now, years went by, and there was no sacrifice, and little by little, the spirit started to go away. And as the spirit started to go away, the land started to get all dried up and dried up. See, at that time, it was kind of like a tropical landscape. It wasn't a desert back at that time. It was kind of like different. It was like the mountains here had rushing waterfalls. I mean, it was a beautiful green tropical place here. And after the sacrificing stopped, it seemed like the spirits went away, and the land started to get all dried up after years. And people started to say, "Wait a minute, you know, the spirits got uneasy." And one day they woke up, and all of a sudden they saw this big bright thing come from the east. And when that happened, all hell broke loose. These things started coming up out of the mountains, all the mountains. The spirits got uneasy, and the petroglyphs show that these things taking people up, taking people away. Now, there were survivors to this, and they ran and they hid in the caves here at South Mountain, and they were a witness to this. And when it was all over with, they all got out of the caves, and they buried the gold back into these tombs, and they knew some of them sacrificed themselves. Some of them were so scared and so worried that they sacrificed their own selves to the gods to the Phoenix Lights, but most of them just buried the tombs and took off, and they headed out of Phoenix, and they vowed never to return back into this land because they knew if they did, one day they'd have to go back to war with these things. And that's what the petroglyphs show. It shows like these Indians were shooting at strange creatures in the sky, and I believe that it was these spirits, it was these things that they were shooting at because something went down, something happened that wasn't good. Things were fine, you know. There was sacrifice going on here. They take the prisoners and they take all the, you know, all these people, and they do sacrifice and worship, and things were fine and dandy up until the point when they stopped, and that's when things started to go downhill. That seems to be kind of the story. And for 400 years after that, for 400 years, apparently that there was salt here in the Valley of the Sun. So nobody lived here. It was all covered with salt. And after that, that's when the Pima started to rise here. And by then, the Apaches were already on the mountain of the Superstition Mountains. But they really didn't live here in the valley. It was like they were kind of, they knew it was cursed. I mean, they left all the stuff here. But by then, all the gold stuff, everything has been missing. Just like with the pyramids in Egypt, okay? Now, those pyramids they had gold on them and stuff. Well, same stuff here in Phoenix. But for some reason, someone took all that gold away. For some reason, all that gold is gone. But the idols are still here. And because the idols are still here is because they knew that the Mayans are going to come back to claim this gold. They're supposed to come back and reclaim this gold, and it's all supposed to start over again. Now, this is interesting when we look at the Mayan calendar, because we're coming close to this 2012, and the Indians are telling us, well, we're in the fourth world now, we're getting ready to go on the fifth. And this is what the Mayans are telling us, well, we're in the fourth world, we're getting ready to go on the fifth. And most people think, well, this Mayan calendar is the end. I don't think so. I think it's the beginning. It never stops. I just think it keeps going. So this 2012 and this Quetzalcoatl and these weird things that we're reading on the Mayans and stuff, I think it has everything to do with what we're seeing now in the Phoenix skies and everything to do with 2012.
So you think the gold idols are still buried in those tombs out there?
Absolutely. Yes, they are. Because when Charles Hobart came in and came into the picture in 1930s, around that, that's when he got into the scene here. He not only was he a poet, he wrote poems, and that's what he really liked to do. He liked to write poems, poetry, and sell it to the people. And he loved the landscape, he loved hiking and things, and he got real good friends with the Indians. And
Jeff, we have to take a break. We'll pick up right there when we come back. Just hold that thought. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Jeff Woolline. And, Jeff, we were talking about this gold. You said you think it's all still here. And you said that when Hobart, who, by the way, Hobart is the name, for those who did not see the video you made, he's the name of the first park ranger out there at South Mountain, and you said that you knew for sure that the gold still had to be here, and you started talking about Hobart. What's the connection between him and knowing that the gold is still in those caves?
Well, according to the records that I found, Hobart understood that there was gold here. The Indians told Hobart on where some of the tombs lie. You know what, let me go back a little bit further here. I'm looking into my records here, and what I'm getting ready to talk about right now is on petroglyphsinthesky.com. It's a newspaper clipping, and I'm looking through my archives now for it, where it talks about a little old lady, okay, and she's paying her rent money, and she's paying all her bills in little gold nuggets, okay, and she's pulling these gold nuggets down from South Mountain. Now I'm looking for the newspaper clipping in my archives here, and I can't really find it right now, but it's on my website, Petroglyphs in the Sky, and it talks about how this little old lady, you know, was pulling these gold nuggets off the mountain. So yes, there are still gold tombs up there, and Charles Holberg understood this. He knew this and realized and found many, according to this records here. He's found many tombs, and one day there was he saw this one guy in his truck, and he followed this guy all the way up to this spot, and the guy started to dig. And the guy put his rifle up against the tree, and he started to dig. And Holberg sat up on a nearby hill and watched the whole thing. And as the guy got up to his shoulders, where the guy couldn't jump out any further, Charles Holberg jumped down and grabbed the guy's gun and told him to stop digging. You know, you're in the wrong spot, man. You need to leave. You know, you need to get out of here and never come back, because actually, in those days, Charles, you know, he kind of threatened him in a way, and he said, don't come back on this land ever again. So, and the next day, you know, he went and told the city officials, hey, look, you know what? There's something over here, and he took him to that spot. Now, there's Roman numerals in front of this spot here. Now, this, in my opinion, this post-dates Charles Holberg. This post-dates, I believe this goes back as far as the Spanish, you know, looking for the gold. You know, I think...
So, you mean it predates?
Go further than that. You know, I think this, those Roman numerals there are very, very old, and it's there for a reason. It's there for a purpose. That's not graffiti or anything. I mean, that's signifying something special for a much greater map. You know, I think those Roman numerals is part of where some of these other major tombs are.
All right, but Jeff, let me ask you. Roman numerals would have to come from people who are familiar with the Roman system,
right,
of mathematics and how to write Roman numbers.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. That's what makes it, you know, really interesting. You know, they're really old, and they're sitting right there in front of where you walk into that tomb there, you know.
Who do you think put those there?
I'm sorry?
Who do you think put those there?
I don't know. I don't know I don't know where those Roman numerals come from. It could be a much, you know, but what I do know is that right there has to go to something else. I mean, that right there is marked. Okay, that's marked. So to me, that's telling me that's a bigger map. There's a map somewhere that somebody has, and they know where that Roman numeral is, that Roman numeral, and it's marking all these special spots here. Okay, it signifies something. It makes it special. Those Roman numerals, in my opinion, wouldn't be there unless, you know, it was something special. And along, not only does those Roman numerals give it away, but the site itself gives it away, and possible giants breaking these stones up and throwing these stones down to consume the doorway. You know, there's so much evidence laying right there, man. It's like, holy cow, you know, those Roman numerals is nothing to compare to the rest of the story that's there.
All right, now you've got, in your video, you show us the entrance to one of these tombs. And
yes,
it's marked right out front with an Army Corps of Engineers seal.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And
why? Why did they put their seal there?
You know, it says, you know, what is it, a $25,000 fine or imprisonment or something like that? You know, it's to deter people from doing anything there. You know, in my opinion, it's there to, you know, if you start digging there and you find something, you know, not only are you going to get in trouble, you know, but for another thing, it's like it's the government's property. They're signifying this is theirs. You can't even... That I don't know how they got that thing in there, but it's all stamped in there, and it's been in there for a very long time. And that circle you can see from the satellite image, that's the only spot on South Mountain that really sticks out like a sore thumb, is that spot right there. And any archaeologist knows that when you find fresh dirt around something, there's something there. And there's plenty of fresh dirt along in there. But here's the thing. All right, every time that I go over there, now this place is in an isolated spot, you know, very... hardly anybody goes back there, you know, and so, but every time I go back there, man, these planes start to gather. Okay, someone's watching this, all right, someone is watching what is going on. I don't know if they have sensors or something out there, but I had trouble making this film because of the damn airplanes. I didn't want to have any airplanes in my audio, so I had to keep waiting for these airplanes to leave. But they were circling, and they were kind of watching what I was doing. So if I start digging or anything like that, you know, you're going to get in trouble. And plus, another thing, I believe that the government knows what is going on and knows that the gold idols are meant to be undisturbed, to be left alone, because they're there for our future, you see? We're not to disturb that, because, in fact, if the story is true, the Phoenix Lights is guarding the tombs. Now, this is what the story comes down to. The story says that these spirits of the earth and sky is guarding the tombs until the Mayans come back to claim it. Point blank.
All right, you have said previously that they're back, that these entities are what the petroglyphs were all about.
That's it.
And therefore, these gods are back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, on my website, I use, because, look, simply because I didn't have enough space on the screen to put the whole detail, I just used the word extraterrestrial. I think you have said previously that you don't know, they may be extraterrestrial or interterrestrial. Terrestrial, maybe from inside the Earth, but they're otherworldly.
I think now, I think they've been with us this whole time. I think this is their home too. I think it's possible that they're able to go to other worlds, Mars. I really think they go to the sun. I really think they absorb that energy from the sun. But I think mostly, if what these ancient scrolls that we've been reading for all these ancient years and stuff is true, then these, you know, things are its home also. You know, they live here too.
So
they've always been with us.
But you think they go to the sun. Now, what evidence do you have for that? Are you just speculating, or are you...
Yeah, I'm just speculating, because you think that, you know, because I've witnessed these things, you know, coming and going from inside this rock here, this mountain, and into these fault lines. And that's where this, you know, this energy is, you know. And so, and some of them, you know, they take off and they go off towards the sun, so who knows, you know. But that's just my theory, that the sun would probably be the best, you know, restaurant there is in the galaxy for them to feed off of, would probably be that sun, because that's where most of the energy would come from. But
yeah.
I think they were cast down. I think this is their home. I think it's possible that the reason why we haven't been seeing them all the way up until maybe 1995 is because they're just now coming out of their imprisonment. They're just now coming out of their tomb, their prison, because they were cast down. But over the years, there's evidence that, you know, those things are still here. You know, like I found a graffiti from, I think it was like 1935 or something like that, where it shows, he puts a date on it, and then he shows that he saw something in the sky. So clearly those things have always been here. It's just now things are starting to pick up. You know, more and more is coming out. So...
All right, Jeff, we have a break coming up. Folks, when we get back from the break, we'll open the telephone lines. And if you have questions or comments, you feel free to call in and ask Jeff or make your comment. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Jeff Woolline. Jeff, if these things are, if they're back, whatever they are, whoever they are, first, let me ask you, are they more intelligent than us? And then secondly, are they dangerous to us?
Yeah, they were, in my opinion, they were created a little bit higher than man. Their intelligence and their just the way they are is just way beyond our comprehension. And I think through the evidence of the past, yes, I think we should pose these things as a threat, because, I mean, look what happened last time, okay? It seems like every time in history when man starts seeing UFOs, the world changes and man disappears, okay? And this is what people aren't getting, it seems like, you know, hey, you know, people are seeing UFOs back then, you know, all of a sudden they're gone. Same thing here, all right? Same stuff here in Phoenix. They were seeing UFOs, now they're gone. So what is that to say to our future? You know,
okay,
when an interview with Channel 5, Greg Walker, he asked me one day, he's like, well, you know what? They've been here since 1997, and yet they're not making contact with us, so we should treat them as a threat, you know, until we you know, find out otherwise. And I'm like, you nailed it, bud. That's it, you know?
All right, when you say... When you say the same thing happened in Phoenix, you know, they started seeing UFOs and now they're gone, you're talking about the Hohokam Indians, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But not only the Hohokam, but you know, the Incas, you know, and all the Egyptians and all that stuff, all the, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah and things like that, all these stories that we read in scrolls on how once there was a civilization, but all of a sudden they're gone. They were wiped out, you know, and gone. You know, well, what happened to them? You know, so it's all over the world. It's not just here. And that's another thing I find kind of disturbing is you watch all these history shows, right? You know, all these shows, and they're doing all these tomb exhibitions and going underground and all these neat things on the other side of the world. But what about, you know, right here in our backyard, okay? What about these mountains over here? I think the archaeologist needs to do a little bit more investigating over here, man. Because I tell you what, they're going to find some stuff. And you know why they don't? Well, there's a few reasons. One, it's because it'll disturb the spirits. And for another, they would have to explain it. They would have to explain on why this is here. They would have to totally rewrite what they've already written in the history books. You know, and they would have to explain the damn thing. So they figured, well, just leave it buried. Don't talk about it. Don't say, don't tell. It's not there. And no one will know. You see?
Yeah. All right. We're going to go to the telephone line. And... caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, you're kind of weak here, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, Jeff, I want to thank you for that video. Kevin's been talking about it and trying to explain it, but a picture is worth a thousand words. Like Kevin says, you know, explain to me what, I don't know what you use, but you know, some kind of a name and tell me what it looks like. You know, you can't conceive, you know, something unless you see it.
Right. well, thank you.
So
much.
I was wondering if
that.
You know, you talk about, you know, certain places at certain times you believe certain things show up. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you ever laid in wait to see something and you ever see and you see something that you're, you know, not letting out because you don't want people to think you're nuts or... Or have you walked around a corner and been stopped in your tracks saying, whoa, you know, what's that, you know, being scared or, you know?
Well, you know, that as far as people saying I'm being nuts, man, that happens to me all the time, okay? I mean, that's nothing new. Everything that I've been saying here is new. It seems like it's new to people because they're all looking, you know, for spaceships and stuff, and this is just something a little bit different. This is all kind of new to me, and like I said, I'm learning as I'm going. This is all new to me, too. I was going into this thinking spaceships, another world, and Phoenix Lights was this big spacecraft and this, but when I first saw it and started realizing what it was, I was like, wait a minute, man, I totally changed on this. And this is the reason why I'm getting the flack that I am, is because, you know, I'm saying something that hasn't been talked about in over 80 years. And there are some things in on my website there, you know, where, you know what, one day, okay, on that one video I show, Skull Rock and the Flying Serpent, okay, like right after the diamond, you see these bright colors fly by the window, right? Now, if you slow motion that video, frame by frame by frame, you will see sparks. There's kind of sparks flying off this thing. Now, when I show it on my website, petroglyphsinthesky.com, I think I headline it colors. It's on the right side of the webpage there. And when you click it, it shows him where I saw him come out of. Now, when I saw this thing, Let me backtrack. Do you remember that one thing that flies through the trees, okay? It looks like a truck. First he comes down, I call him Dot. The UFO on my website, Petroglyphs in the Sky, I call him Dot, all right? He's got these legs, and he's got a little circle and a dot. Now, he cruises across the trees, and he's kind of red, and he's got these black legs. And Scott Davis from Channel 3 calls him a little truck. So anyway, he landed, so I'm waiting for him to leave, because when I see him land, that means they're going to leave one of these, you know, soon, and I just don't know when. Well, it took him 30 days later. I think it was 30 days later. That's when he left, okay, and he looked just like that truck, that little red truck cruising across the trees, but this time he was much bigger, and he was faced east. He was faced in the other direction, and I swear to God, my eyes saw him absorb himself out of a nearby tree less than a block away from me, okay? When I saw this thing, I was in, like, my living room, and I looked out my kitchen window, and there he was. He was raising up into the sky, and he looked like a big marshmallow. I can't explain it, and big legs or whatever, marshmallow thing. And I was like, holy cow, what is that? I ran to the camera, turned on the camera. It takes 3 seconds for that thing to warm up. As it's warming up, this thing's going up into the sky. And as soon as the camera catches it, bam, it blows up into colors. It's flashing like fireworks in the sky, man. And it's cruising. It's coming right at me. So and the camera, I'm not looking at through the viewfinder. I'm not standing up. The camera's on a tripod about waist length, okay, about up to my waist. And I have my little window open. So I'm filming this thing looking out the window. I don't have my eye to the viewfinder. I'm looking in this little window of the camera. Okay, so my peripheral vision, my regular vision is seeing sparks in the sky, but my eyes on the camera is seeing something different. Now, when I look up, holy see it in the camera, too, because it kind of zigzags around. My camera zigzags.
Jeff, can you hear me? Jeff, can you hear me? I know you're excited, and I know you're passionate. Watch your language.
Oh, yes, my bad. I apologize about that.
All right.
But, yes, you know, there are some things that I haven't even posted yet. You know, I've got stuff that people haven't even seen yet because I'm afraid, because look at it now. They're already saying that I'm seeing balloons and things like that. Well, you know what, when I got these things dancing around up there, and to anybody else, they're going to call it balloons, but I know it's not a balloon, so I'm just going to keep it to myself, you know. Well, maybe one day, when people start seeing the same things I'm seeing, you know, then I might be able to bring forward some of this other video that I have. But until that happens, man, you know, I'm getting enough flack about what it is now. So.
All right, the telephone number is 623-237-3814. We would love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, these are really, honestly, very strange things. If you have not seen the videos that are at Jeff's site, you need to go over to Petroglyphs in the Sky and watch the videos. There are people, Jeff, and we've addressed this before, there are people who look at those videos, and some of them, they will say, well, I don't know, I can't really tell, but, you know, maybe that's balloons. Well, okay, but if so, the very same balloon manufacturer is turning balloons loose in Mexico, in Turkey. Where else have I seen those same creatures from? Chile? You know, these things are being seen all over the world, and they're not, it's not people who normally would have, in most cases, the funds to go buy some big fancy balloon, fill it with helium. I mean, have you ever priced helium? It is expensive. Plus, I can tell you that I have seen some of these things that indeed make you think at first, I wonder if that's a balloon. And then you see it move against the wind. And that's something balloons don't do. And they'll move against the wind, fly against the wind. And so I don't know what they are. I can't say what they are because I don't know. But I pretty much am certain that it's not balloons. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Jerry. I'm calling from Phoenix.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Oh, this is just absolutely intriguing. I'm glad you got Jeff on there. There's a story I've been holding on to for a long time, and it's right in alignment with what you guys are talking about tonight. We ran into something really strange as we were exploring an area in the Amazon. There is a village down there where some children were coming up dead. And what was happening is that they would find these kids anywhere from 3 to 10 years old, and there'd be a bit of money shoved inside the clothes that were left. They had some of their organs taken out. And this has been going on in third world countries for quite a while. When we were down at one of the lodges down there one night, or late in the afternoon, there was a flying man that they were talking about that they had seen earlier. He looked like he had some kind of a jet pack on, had a little blue light on it, and because this has been going on for a while around in some of the villages scattered about the Amazon, one of the farmers there pulled up a shotgun and fired at this thing. Well, it went down. And the next thing you know, they're chasing this thing through the trees. It came running right across the area of the lodge and disappeared back into the jungle again. Interestingly, there had been a boat with quote-unquote missionaries from some church that had parked on an island out in the middle of the Amazon River, right across from this lodge, and this is where they'd seen this thing flying back and forth between. At night, they saw the light. Well, no one knows who it was or what it is, but it's just another example of these things flying about. In this case, it was low altitude, and these folks actually saw that it was a human, or at least it looked like a person.
When they shot at it, they hit it, right?
Apparently so.
They hit it. Did they explain on how it went down? Did it smoke? Did it act like it was hurt?
No, it just came down pretty quick, landed in the jungle in a bog.
As quick
the guy
as
was
fired,
in a suit.
But they're sure he was a man. He was a guy, huh?
Well, they said it had two arms, two legs, and a head. So they figured it was a person.
Now, when you say that it was in a suit, what kind of suit?
Well, they didn't explain it too clearly. They just said that it was wearing a suit with a helmet. And the helmet was over its face. The whole thing was enclosed, apparently. Because they were asking me if I thought it was extraterrestrials. And I said, well, I don't know of any humans that have something like this. This jetpack wasn't really a jetpack like we know a jetpack to be, because it didn't emit any smoke. It didn't make any sound. It just made a whooshing noise as it went flying through the air real fast.
Wow. That's hard to say. It's really hard to say what that was.
Yeah, it's impossible to know what that was, but we were there, and it was just an incredible story. The people there were really afraid, because it happened while we were there.
Does it happen normally?
It was happening quite a bit, and these kind of events where organs are taken out of children happen quite frequently throughout these extremely remote areas in the Amazon jungle. We never run into this in the Andes.
Do you think it has anything to do with voodoo rituals?
No, nothing like that at all, because this is done with surgical precision. And the bodies are left there, and there's a few hundred dollars shoved in a pocket for the family.
That's weird. That sounds something like, that doesn't sound extraterrestrial. They're leaving money and stuff. That sounds like someone having sympathy on something. You know, to me, this kind of sounds like maybe a cult, you know, trying to keep maybe the gods happy by sacrificing children, and they feel guilty for their families, so they give them money, you know. But they feel that they have to sacrifice these children to keep the gods happy, because this is the way it was in the old days. That would be my guess.
Jerry, let me ask you a question. Now, you have done a lot of exploring down around the Amazon. You've spent a lot of time among the descendants of the ancient Mayans. You've been with the modern Mayans. Taking what Jeff just said, is it possible that maybe some of the modern Mayans have adopted what they understand to be the religion of their ancient ancestors and are doing sacrifices?
No, I don't think so. It'd be the Inca.
Okay.
It wouldn't be the Mayans. I don't think so, because wherever this quote-unquote church group shows up, these kinds of things happen, but they're very secretive and no one knows who they are, really. The people down there don't have that kind of money at their disposal. As a matter of fact, if they have $10 in a year, it's incredible. So, you know, they don't have a few hundred dollars, and they wouldn't sacrifice their children. Down there, their children are, well, you don't mess with the children.
Mm-hmm.
But to have, surgical precision of organs removed, very similar to cattle mutilations, it's a very strange thing. And, you know, I'm thinking, I reflect back on when I was talking to my friend Jim Hertak. He was telling me about some things that were going on in Brazil, where these extraterrestrials were showing up on top of a mountain, and they were taking people. And the people, of course, they never came back. And they, you know, they had, of course, quite extraordinary technology at their disposal. And that's why people were going. They thought that they were there because they were going to get a free ride to another planet. Well, you know, as Jim told me, I don't think I would take that ride.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have to agree with him. I don't know that these are extraterrestrial. I have a feeling that it could be because of the technology involved. Because they do have another thing I just remembered. It's a tube that shoots a blue light that knocks you on your rear end if it hits you. So, yeah, it's just a strange thing. But I thought that I would offer that in relation to the video, the videos that you have, the information you've given this evening, and perhaps another piece of the puzzle.
It could be. It could be.
All right, Jerry, in your explorations of South America,
mm-hmm.
Have you run into stories of people seeing the same sorts of things that Jeff has been videotaping?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's why I was making the connection between this story and what he's talking about. There are other stories down there as well that are very similar in nature to you know, what Jeff has presented this evening. And he's right. It's a worldwide phenomenon. We don't know who these folks are or what they represent. And it's interesting that they're showing up now at this time in our world history as we are approaching 2012. I don't know if there's a direct connection with that or not, but it just seems uncanny that these things are becoming quite prolific in places where the news never really leaks out of the area unless you happen to be there, know the people, and they want to talk to you about it.
Right.
All right. Now, in your exploration of South America, have you found petroglyphs?
Yes, absolutely.
And have in those petroglyphs, did in South America, do they draw a spiral like we see in Jeff's videos? Do they use that there as well?
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, one of the upcoming episodes of Expeditions TV, we're going to be showing one at Silistani that has a spiral, a delta, and two holes. And each of these holes are close to each other into volcanic rock. And one of the holes is very powerful magnetic north, and the other is very powerful magnetic south. But we run into these spirals quite frequently down you know, in these out of the way places.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly marking the spot for a doorway. A doorway for the, you know, for energy, and on molten lava rock there, you know, that just makes me think fault lines.
Well,
the area that we found these at is a place called Celestani, which is a very intriguing place, quite mysterious, and it could very well have a doorway there. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think if someone would just stake that area out at the right time of seasons, you know, you never know. You might see something there.
Well, Celestani is not that far from Aramamuru, the doorway.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure probably someone is out there watching something. They're just not saying anything, you know. But if it's anything like it is here on the mountains here in Phoenix, then, you know, I mean, you can't help but not see it.
Well, another interesting aspect of this is that in a recent expedition down there, Kathy, before we had gone, she had found what, from the satellite photos, looked like a man flying.
Jerry, we're almost into a break here. Let me ask you, are you willing to hang on through the break?
Yeah, of course.
All right. Folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. When we went away, Jerry, you were about to tell us something that Kathy had found. Well, hang on a second, Jerry. All right, now we can hear you.
All right. While examining satellite photographs of the Altiplano that's near the doorway, we were looking for any clues that may give us additional information about the doorway. Kathy discovered that there was an area that's close to a place called Ilave, that when seen in satellite photographs, it appeared to show in very great detail a man that looked like he was lying prone, and if you were to hold it a certain way, it looked as though he were flying across the Altiplano. This figure is about a mile long and about 7/10 of a mile high. We went down there, and we did another episode for Expeditions TV of this particular expedition, and we'll have it on. The thing is that this is a birdman of Peru, which was documented in the 1700s, men who fly through the air.
And now, wait, you say it's documented in the 1700s?
Yes.
How?
There was, a friar or priest or someone like that. I've forgotten the guy's name. Maybe Kathy remembers. But thing is he was in this this fight with a group of Indians called the Canibos. And in the middle of this big, fierce fight, them with their muskets and the Canibos with their bows and arrows and blowguns, they all stopped when this figure came floating through the trees with a light that lit up the field between them. The Canibos went home, and of course the priest and those accompanying him went the other way, and they never met up with Canibos again after that, or at least not for some time. But he documented what he saw, and he was astonished by it.
Wow. All right, now, Jeff, have you heard from any of the local present day Native Americans around this area anything about legends about flying men?
Yeah, of course. They talk about, you know, these they refer to them as spirits, and you know, in the petroglyph, you know, when they show it to you, they show you a petroglyph of what looked like, you know, a guy or whatnot, but actually he's in spirit form. you know. Excuse me. So, clearly, yes, these things like to take the shapes of men. Clearly, you know, we've seen it in on the rocks here, and now we're starting to see it, you know, basically in the sky. These things like to take the shape of people.
All right. Jerry, I've got to move along to the next call. Before you go, though, I want to remind everyone about the drawing that you're sponsoring from Expeditions TV. On March the 2nd, we're going to do the drawing right here, live on the air. And as camera shy as our producer is, he has agreed that he'll do the drawing for us. And someone... this will be names of everybody that subscribed to our members area. Their name will be on a slip of paper in a box, and he'll shake it up, and then he'll reach in and draw a name out, and whoever he draws out is going to get that really beautiful tapestry, hand-woven tapestry that is from Urcos Island, and I appreciate you for sponsoring that.
Absolutely. Happy to do it. You're the greatest, Kevin, and we just couldn't do without you. So anything we can do to help, you know we'll be there for you.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for the call, Jerry.
Absolutely. Have a great evening. Nice talking to you, Jeff.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for calling.
All right. The telephone number is 623-237-3814. 623-237-3814. Jeff, there you go. I mean, you know, we have talked about the fact that these things are, it's not just something that Jeff Woolline is seeing. These are things that are being seen by people in various parts of the world. And even here, in this part of the world, these are things that other people see. It's not just you.
I found that old newspaper clipping where it talks about the old and the golden
gate. Yeah.
Okay.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Show. First, thank you for calling. Yeah, we're not hearing you. Okay, we're not the main, but we're not able to pick on. All right, 623-237-3814 is the number, 623-237-3814. And if you have a question or comment, feel free to give us a call. If you live outside of the United States or you live outside of Canada, you can do something else. You can send us a flash message, and you do that by just going over to my website and... scroll down, and you'll see in green letters where it says flash message. Now, if you are, in fact, living in the United States, flash message won't work for you. If you are living in Canada, that won't work for you. You need to give us a telephone call. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Trey in Louisiana.
Hi, Trey.
Hey, guys. Let me ask you, Jeff, I saw I probably about a year ago, Jaime Masson's video. It was on the internet, and I'm sure everybody's seen it, with him giving his presentation and showing the video of all those hundreds of objects flying together in unison. But there was one object that was kind of in the middle, and it was a larger object that kept changing shapes. It changed shapes into a turtle, into a couple of other animals. But it was obviously... changing shapes. I'm going to hang up, and I want to ask you, do you think that was basically the same beings or being that you've been watching since it was able to change shapes like that? And I know you haven't seen, you know, hundreds and hundreds all at once out there by South Mountain, but what do you think those things were that it was controlling that was with it? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Well, I haven't seen the film, but it sure does sound like, you know, to a T on what I've been seeing out here on South Mountain. So it describes it to a T. They change color, they change shape, they like to take animal form. I've seen these things what look like maybe a sheep, you know, and then turn into a snake. They're constantly shape-shifting, but they always, shapeshifters, I've noticed, will always go back into the original shape, you know, so they just like to take the shapes of different things. So I think this is the reason why the natives and the ancestors, you know, treated these things as, you know, so as gods, or they looked at them as awe, because this is something, you know, something completely above our heads, literally. Yeah. This is some really touchy stuff here, and it's just, like I said, it's something that man just isn't able to comprehend yet, you know.
All right, let's go to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hello, this is Doc.
Hello, Doc.
From Arkansas.
From Arkansas. How are you this evening?
Oh, doing good.
Good.
I was calling to ask you folks a question. I was watching the videos earlier when your video was cutting in and out and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering on that there, does he know approximately the height and where the stuff was in the video?
Yeah, he did answer that. You're talking about the UFO that the airplane turned away from?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, he did answer that, but Jeff, we were having at that time, you know, problems with our video feed and audio feed.
That's okay.
Yeah, if you could answer that again, how high was that, and how big do you think it was?
Well, when we first noticed it, it was right off the hill there. My guess, maybe about 5 to 10 feet off the hill to the left of the camera frame there. And then once I got on the camera, because my son started filming it, and it was blurry. It was blurring in and out. So after that, I took control of the camera. And by then, it had moved kind of in front of us and went a little higher. That airplane, give or take, has got to be at least about 2,000 feet up, I'd say. And that object was a lot lower, give or take maybe 1,000 feet lower. So it had just left the mountain minutes by the time that plane went by it, I guess. So I'd have to say it climbed, give or take, maybe anywhere from maybe 1,000 feet, I guess, maybe it was there. But later on in the video, man, that thing seems to be a lot closer, and I didn't even notice that it was still hanging around as I was still doing the film out there. It was still in the sky. So,
all right. You know, does that answer your question, Doc?
Visible.
Very interesting video. I was really, you know, surprised about it and everything. It was this, see, because up here, and I was down and on the way here in Arkansas, it almost looked like that. I was on Interstate 65, and there were some vehicles up in the air, looked like two of them. And I was heading towards Little Rock, Arkansas, and it looked almost like when you had a close-up zoom of it, and that's what it almost looked like.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
All right, Doc, thanks for the call.
I just wanted to give you a call. Kevin, doing a great show. Keep it up, man.
Well, thank you, and thanks for the call. All right, folks, the telephone number is 623-237-3814, and the telephone lines are open. If you have a question or a comment, I think a lot of you who are listening tonight saw the video in its entirety on Monday night. And I think you were probably pretty impressed with the quality of the video work. A lot of that was done. A lot of the video was shot by Jeff's 14-year-old son. Pretty amazing. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Jason in Las Vegas.
Hi, Jason.
And my question was for Jeff is, since I moved out west from Georgia, there I live 5 minutes across from the Red Rock Canyons here in Las Vegas, and then they also have Fire Rock Canyon, and in both canyons they have petroglyphs, and the one in Fire Rock is really just a whole canyon full of petroglyphs. I'm wondering if Jeff has ever ventured out to really study any other petroglyphs besides the one right there in Phoenix. And I'll listen to the answer off.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Well, through my research, yeah, you know, I haven't physically been to other places, but oh yeah, over the years, over this, you know, what, 13, 14 years of research I've been doing, sure, I've looked at many, many, many rock arts from all over the world. And, you know, what I find kind of fascinating is some of this art, you know how you can tell the artist, you know? Well, it looks like some of this art from around the world looks like the same artist had done this, you know? So it's kind of intriguing, like he was here at South Mountain, and then he went to the Australia and did some carvings over there, and then he went to Mexico and he did some carvings. So it's very fascinating, and what I found out,
you'll have to hold on to what you found out. We're into a break, and when we come back, you can tell us what you found out. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Jeff Woolline. Jeff, you were about to tell me what you found.
Well, when I'm studying this rock art, now, there's many different stories as many different generations. What I mean by this is we have the caveman rock art, okay, which we can find on South Mountain up there, and they talk about their story. And then we find the whole Calm of the Mind, we find that rock art. And then we find other art from different, you know, in different Indian tribes that doesn't talk about UFOs, that doesn't talk about spirits, but talks about something else, like maybe a deer that they hunted over there. You know, so each, some of these petroglyphs, it depends on what generation we're talking about here. Now, when I'm talking about these petroglyphs, I'm always talking about the older generations, ones that go at least from anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 years old. I'm not talking about the petroglyphs that we see, you know, like the up-to-date ones, you know, where they're talking about, you know, the war with the white man, or things like that, or shooting a bull, or a...
Yeah, you're talking about the really ancient ones.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct. And when I find this out, when I'm researching this, it seems to be the same story. A little bit different interpretation, but basically the same point, the same story. And like I said before, it even seems like it's the same artist, and that's what kind of gets a little freaky. It looks like the same guy did that.
Yeah, and but it's all over the United States and
right,
South America,
yeah,
as well.
It's everywhere.
All right, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, I'm Kathy from Phoenix.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Hi, Jeff. I was wondering, what part of South Mountain are you seeing these flying things?
Oh, boy, it goes from east side all the way to west. You know, those Phoenix lights, they showed up right in between the west side of South Mountain and right at the border of the Australia Mountains. They actually made a chain link. Those lights, they linked from the Australia all the way to south on the west side. But where I'm seeing the most heaviest is the east side, 40th Street and Baseline, right around in there, Ahwatukee. Whenever they turn on that power plant out there, you know, that's the best time to see those lights, because it attracts those lights. Whenever that power plant kicks on, those lights seem to pop up right around over there. So, and a lot has to do with the type of seasons, too. Like, now is the perfect time to go see one, between now and this next equinox that we're getting ready to have. And then a week or two after that, they should start to come back. But right now, during the springtime, is like the best time to see them.
Oh, great. I'll have to go up there.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? If you go up, okay, let me tell you where to go. There's a spot. It's real easy to get to. If you take, there's a Rustler's Roost restaurant out there. Now, if you just keep following that all the way into Ahwatukee, you might want to get a map out. But there's, in a residential area, you'll have to drive through a residential area up into the park entrance. You can go into South Mountain Park entrance, and there's a parking lot that you park right there. Now, there's some Ramada tables there, And if you keep going on the east side where the houses are, you will find some big stones with petroglyphs on it. Now, if you go over to the far east of them, far east of those petroglyphs, you will find some rocks that have diamonds on them. Now, if you want to see these things and really passionate about this, go visit those diamonds right there and make yourself aware of these things, and then get off the mountain and sit and watch for a couple days. You might not see one that day. You might see one that day. It's happened to me before. Or you might see it maybe in the next 6 months to a year. But if you go up there and acknowledge them at that spot, you will eventually see one.
Is there a certain time of day they come out?
You know what? Since you live here in Phoenix, I could always arrange a tour with you. I can meet you up there, and we could do some sky watching if you'd like to.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Jeff, is there a certain time of day? Is there a certain time of day, Jeff, that's the best time?
These things, what I've noticed is they like the mornings. Right at sunset or sunrise, boy, they like the mornings. And sometimes around lunchtime, between like 11 and maybe 1 o'clock. But the heaviest time to see them is right around dinner time, you know, around between like 5 and 7. 5:30 in 2005 now, that's when that was the hot time, was at 5:30. Now it seems to be moved up a half an hour up. Now it seems to be around 6 o'clock seems to be the hot time. I can't explain this. I don't know why, but it just seems to be the hot time. But those are the hot times between like 5 and 7 on 40th Street and Baseline.
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Call in and email me and give me your information, and we'll get together and we'll do some hiking.
All right. Thanks for the call. I don't think we have time for another call, but... this is something that people really, really, really have to experience, Jeff.
Yes.
Here's the thing about it. I mean, I live out here, and I've seen strange things in the sky. But until I went out to South Mountain and saw on the rocks ancient carvings of the same things I've seen in the sky, it really didn't have the impact that it has had. I mean, obviously that makes sense. But I mean, you know, it just didn't hit me
as
to how ancient this is and how real it is.
That's correct. And once you've seen it as many times as I have, holy cow, you will never stop thinking about this. Will totally change your life. I tell all the people that go hiking with me, if they really want to see this, this will change your life, and you won't be the same afterwards, because it will finally sink in. It will finally dawn on you, hey, wait a minute, that was something. You actually did see something, you know. And I've been seeing it for years, and I'm just trying to tell people, hey, you know what, it's over there, and this is how to do it, and this is it, you know, so... I think it's only a matter of time. You know what I think? I think these little white airplanes, okay, and these black helicopters, now they're doing a good job of trying to keep these things suppressed. When they fly up next to these things don't like the airplanes. They seem to fly away from the airplanes. Sometimes they don't even care. The airplanes will come right up next to them. But most of the time, these things, they don't like airplanes. They fly away from them. I'm thinking within this next year, I think because of all the budgets that's going on, the problems, I think they might cut back on some of the gas on these airplanes, and I think if they cut down on the air traffic up there, and if they cut down on the suppression, that means more and more of these things will start to come out, and I think eventually the city of Phoenix will get a mass sighting like Mexico, where they had about 100 to 200 of them up in the air. And this is the reason why I think that Mexico is seeing them so much, is because I don't believe that their government is trying to suppress them. They're not trying to keep them in dormant. It's so weird. It's like these helicopters, they know when these things are going to happen. So this helicopter flies over to that spot. He hovers over there for 15 minutes. Then the helicopter leaves. A half an hour later, one of those things will leave from that exact spot. And it just amazes me. How did that helicopter know? You see? So, and I think... if the Mexican isn't suppressing them, this is the reason why they're seeing them so bad, and I think they might cut back some of the gas budget on this. And if that's the case, if they're going to stop suppressing them, we should see a lot of them here in Phoenix within the next year or so.
All right. Tell us the name of your website.
Well, I have two of them. One's called Seeing UFOs Over Phoenix, S-E-E-N, UFOs with an S over Phoenix, and then petroglyphsinthesky.com. And it's a little bit kind of hard to spell, petroglyphsinsky.com. And it basically goes into all the history that I found and the rock art. And basically, you know, Holbert's the man. You know, Charles Holbert, he was the first park ranger, and he really took care of business, and he really knew what was going on. And if anybody wants to look into this, it's in the Phoenix Government Department. Just dig into the true city of Phoenix, and you will find everything that I'm talking about.
Outstanding. Jeff, stay on the phone line with me for a moment. All right, folks, that's a wrap for this evening. And sorry about those of you who join us by video. You had a little difficulty at the beginning of the show, but we got around that, didn't we? My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody. Eli Media Network, where 21st century programming happens every minute. Hey, remember, the great music you hear on Steel Eye Media Network is available for you to download for free at GarageBand.com.
satisfied. Didn't last that long.